But the tactic that I usually use is the number one question is always why, right? Why are you interested in this job? Why would you consider this job? Because what it's going to do is it's either one, going to tell me what their motivations are, and a lot of times they will naturally volunteer what their reservations are as well. And to me, every job, every candidate, there are red flags. We just have to identify them and address them, right?
Yep.
Doesn't mean they're not a good candidate, but we just know, hey, if this deal is not going to work, it's going to be because of this, right? And if we know that going into it, then to me, I feel more confident. It's always the red flag that I didn't see coming that just, it frustrates me.
Are you ready to transform your technology game? If you're a tech expert, a top talent recruiter, or a go-getter, this podcast has something for you. Welcome to the Innova Solutions podcast series, where your curiosity will soar.
Hello, and welcome to the Innova Solutions podcast. I'm Daniel Williams, Managing Director of the Texas office. I am joined today by three of my close friends and colleagues here at Innova Solutions, senior business development managers within the organization. First up, I've got Al Roden. How you doing, Al?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Great, great. I've got Evan Chambly. How we doing, Evan?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks, Dan.
Good, good. And last but not least, the lovely Mary Kate. How we doing, Mary?
Doing well.
All right. Okay, so today we're getting into our part two of our series regarding sort of issues, red flags, the things that clients and staffing organizations don't always talk about, things that I think really resonate in terms of real-life scenarios that we run into. Today's podcast, we're going to focus a little bit more on the candidate side of some of these issues, some of the problems that we run into, and the ways that we avoid, maybe mitigate them in the future and deal with them in real time. So with that being said, let's start. First question I've got for you, Mary. What strategies do you use to ensure a timely schedule with regards to interviews, screenings, assessments of candidates? What are some of the things that you do?
I think from that first conversation with the candidate, getting their interview availability makes it pretty easy, at least from the get-go, right? I understand things happen, people have to reschedule, but getting your proactive interview availability from a candidate, I think, ensures like the timely scheduling of interviews, because then I don't have to play the game of like, let me call them and see when they're available. I already have it. We can just schedule it, right? Like getting their permission, hey, I'm going to schedule the interview based on these times. You know, of course, again, understand things might change, but I think that's how I typically go about it to start.
Okay. And what is, what's been the biggest problem that you run into when it comes to scheduling?
Well, I think you can tell very quickly how committed a candidate is to potentially getting a new job. If they don't want to give you proactive interview availability, they don't understand why. Like they're dodgy about it, right? That's a big red flag for me. So
I agree, yeah.
Yeah, those tend to be the ones that, honestly, I'll probably pull out of the interview process at some point.
Sure.
Again, I know life happens. So if you have to reschedule once, okay. And it happens on the client side sometimes. But if we're getting into, like, you're needing to reschedule an interview several times, it's like, okay, do you really even want this job? And that, for me, is we're just going to pull you, mm-hmm. which I've pulled people at final interviews before. So... yeah.
Okay. So interesting. So Evan, have you done that where you've had candidates that you had trouble communicating with that you pull out of the interview process? And like, if you've done that, what do you tell the client?
Oh yeah. No, I've done it on finals, like Mary said as well. And it's just like, hey, look, you know, we screened him. Your guy had a screen. He was good, but his communications are weird. You know, like just weird stuff happens. And yeah, you pull him. Like if I don't feel good about him, or I know for sure, it's just like not a good feeling. I've learned to trust my gut. Cause I've gotten burned over it a few times, but, and then I just tell the client like, hey man, like, this is what happened. I didn't have a good feeling. I tell them the red flags, and then
what's the benefit to the client by doing that?
They appreciate the transparency. It builds trust, and they're like, "You're respecting my time because you're not going to, you know, send me a candidate that's not going to get the job and just going to waste my time, right?"
So, yeah,
yeah. There's value there.
Al, have you seen that it's common for organizations? Well, maybe you, I don't know if we would know this from our point of view, but The antithesis to that is you're sending candidates that are flaky and just hoping it works out. Have you gotten feedback from clients where they've said that that's something they've endured in the past?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do agree with what Evan just said in terms of they value that and they appreciate that, because it sends a message that we're actually taking care of their needs first, and we're not just trying to close a deal, even if we know it's going to be an issue. And the tactic that I use with the candidates is, and it's not just for the interview times, but just throughout the job, it's what I call take the job away. Right. If that candidate's not fighting and convincing me that this is a job that they want. So I'm like, hey, I'm a little bit concerned. I think the rate might be below what you're looking for. Hey, maybe we move on and we look at something else. Or, hey, you know, maybe this interview time is it's a struggle. You can't commit. Maybe this is not a good time. Right. Now, if they come back and they're like, no, you know, hey, I want this opportunity, you know, then it's easier to get more of a commitment versus us giving them an option, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But yeah, so it's just, you know, how you take that away, and then just trying to get a commitment on both sides. And I agree with Mary. You know, life happens, things change. And I just had an interview get canceled but getting rescheduled because the candidate was sick, right? So now what I got to figure out, okay, are we really sick, or, you know, is there another issue?
Well, on that point, what are some of the questions, Al, that you ask candidates to assess, you know, their overall interest in it? So we talked a little bit about taking the job away and making sure that they really do want it. Taking the job away is sort of a euphemism for just what would happen if they didn't have this opportunity. But what kind of questions would you ask to assess their skills, experience, culture fit, that kind of thing with the client?
So in terms of that is, hey, you know, I'm asking, what have you done, right? So for example, I've got an SDET role that's open, and they're testing or they're creating the test scripts specifically for web applications. So I may not be qualified to do a technical assessment and really know if you're good or not, but I'm going to ask, you know, a simple question might be, well, what type of applications have you created test scripts for, right? Now, the answer I'm looking for is web-based, right, or whatever the case may be. And then, you know, well, what framework were you in? And then what was your role, you know, within the organization? Were you in a team? Were you solo? Hey, what does that look like? So the more detail they can give me in terms of what they've done versus me asking yes or no questions. Again, I'm not technical enough to assess their skills, but based on how they answer, then I can use that information and see how it compares to the environment that we're trying to.
Yeah, I'll add on to that, because I do the same thing. Like I will ask client for, you know, interview questions, or I'll sit on the interview and I'll write down the questions and some answers.
So clients will actually let you sit on the interviews?
Oh yeah. Like I sit on every interview if it's not through.
And what's the benefit to doing that?
I understand what they're actually looking for, what the questions they ask. So I can actually ask these questions in the screen. And then the candidate thinks I'm technical. And so they actually I've noticed this with candidates and recruiters. They won't fully dive into the technical details because they're like, you're not technical, it doesn't really matter. Like, just send me to the client, you know?
Right.
It's their thought process. So, like, when you have those technical questions and you're asking them, they're like, oh, wow, you know, this guy's actually technical. So they open up, you can really vet their stuff out, because if they're giving you good detail going into, like, the nitty-gritty of it, then you're like, okay, this guy knows his stuff. But if they're just kind of giving you the high level, the buzzwords that you know, that I know, like, then you're like, okay, this guy might not be a solid fit, you know. So
that's interesting, because it doesn't take a developer necessarily to be able to identify another developer. In fact, a lot of our clients aren't super technical. If they were, they may not need the position that they have open, right? So they're actually themselves are not necessarily always the most technical person. But it doesn't take a technical person to be able to identify who's going to be a right fit. And I think that's sort of the magic in what we do in a lot of ways. But the truth is, I think getting a really good understanding of what the client wants, whether it's sitting in on interviews and whether it's having really, really in-depth conversations when you qualify these roles, or just getting questions from the manager themselves on exactly the kind of stuff that they're going to want us to screen. Those are ways that we can get really accurate screenings without being super technical ourselves, and that's okay. That's really interesting, though, that sitting in on interviews can have that kind of an impact. Mary, with regards to, like, culture fit, is there anything that you do? I know a lot of times when we're working on contract positions, culture may not matter as much. Sometimes we work on direct hire roles. Culture matters a little bit more. But I have to say, even in contract roles, even in project solution type environments, there's still a bit of a culture fit that comes into play. What are some of the things you do to identify that?
To be honest, I think it's just really easy to tell first conversation with someone, like, if they would be a good culture fit, right? And I think what I mean by that is they are personable. They can have a conversation. You know, you're not dragging, like, or leading the conversation. It's not just this awkward silence. And then I think, too, I guess to go back to a little bit what Evan was saying, I kind of go about these red flags a little different. I go into it like I don't know anything because people love to talk about themselves. So then I'm like, hey, I actually don't know a lot about this. Can you tell me about it? And I can tell in how detailed then they want to tell me about what mm-hmm. they're really good at, if they know what they're talking about or not. And through that, though, too, it's like, okay, well, why are you looking for a new role? And then a lot of times culture will come up from the candidate, and then they'll tell you why, you know, culture was maybe bad for them at the last role or what they're looking for as culture. And so I think those are things for me where I'm like, okay, that's an important piece of them finding a new job. And also I understand what my client's culture is. So, if it's collaborative, like, does this person like being collaborative, or are they more, I want to, you know, be individual. So I think just knowing your client and like the culture and what they tell you, you can kind of match that skill to someone. But, you know, meeting them in person these days is a little bit tougher. I always try and hop on like Teams, since we're all, you know, in different locations, just to have that off the phone conversation. I think that can help too, but that's how I would say I go about it.
So
I got another thing on that too. Like what Mary was saying, like when you're talking about culture fit and you're kind of talking to them, you know what your client wants. Like they want a go-getter, someone who doesn't have to, you know, have their hand held and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. They're just going to get stuff done. You can tell like when you're screening these candidates, like if they talk really slow, or, you know, like I've always found that the people that talk really slow, they always sound like they're tired, aren't go-getters. And so I've kind of picked that up, and it's a red flag. Go like, okay, this guy's not going to be a fit because I don't think he has the drive for this, you know, culture.
Right. Okay.
But show some enthusiasm.
Show some enthusiasm already. Yeah, and I think that, you know, we can kind of catch on. I mean, the truth is we talk to candidates that are fielding sometimes many calls from folks when it comes to looking for jobs. And fair enough, like they're not going to be interested in each and every job. It's partly on us to determine whether or not we're at the top of the list or not so much. But it's sometimes hard, right? They may say the right things. They may have the right personality. They may be a good fit on paper. But next thing you know, they're taking a little bit longer to get back to you. Maybe they're finishing a project and you know that they're busy. So it's okay that they're not always getting back to you right away, but it is making you nervous. And this is a real scenario where we've got great candidates sometimes for really, you know, really hard to find jobs. And it's easy to say, pull the candidate, we're done with them. And it's easy to say, ignore it altogether, let's just pray it works out. But what's the in-between? What does it look like to work with a flaky candidate to a success? You're not pulling them from the process. Instead, you're working them through toward the end. Like, what does that story look like to go from a candidate missed a call with you, and now you're taking it from that moment to offer, accept, and great project completed? How do we coach them through that? And I guess this question is going back to you, Mary. Like, what are some of the things you do to actually make that a win rather than, you know, ditching the candidate and moving on to the next?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just typically I go back to the candidate very directly and I'm like, look, what's going on? You know, it's been great up until this point. Something's changed. Something's shifted. Like, I need you to tell me what's going on because I can't help you if I don't know, right? Like, I don't want to pull the job away. I want it to work out for everyone, especially if I know that they'll be good at the job and a good fit. But sometimes you just have to directly, like, check in, like, you know, and be relatable. I tell people a lot from the, you know, candidate side, like, hey, I get it. Change is scary because sometimes they're just starting to second guess because they're literally nervous about changing a job. And I just make it more personal. Like, I've gone through this myself recently. I put in my 2-week notice and then panicked right afterward. You know, like, I get it. So
yeah.
I think if we can identify why there's been a shift in how the relationship has been, then you can find a solution.
Okay. So, yeah, you start at the point of what the heck happened differently and go from there. What about you, Al? Have you had a situation where you had a candidate that was going great, all of a sudden things started to, you know, change, and then it worked out anyway?
Yeah. I mean, I think that almost happens, it feels like, with every placement. You know, and the reason I say that is, you know, kind of to what Mary said is, is, you know, what changed? And things do change from day to day, right? So I think it was last year we had a candidate. It appeared everything went great until we got the offer letter.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because we got the candidate literally everything that they asked for and then some. It was a contract to hire job. Red flag was, you know, benefits and going perm. We turned it into a direct hire. We got the salary increase. I mean, everything that he asked for across the board came up. So, you know, so there was really nothing for us left to do. So we felt okay walking away from it. But the tactic that I usually use is the number one question is always why, right? Why are you interested in this job? Why would you consider this job? Because what it's going to do is it's either one, going to tell me what their motivations are. And a lot of times they will naturally volunteer what their reservations are as well. And to me, every job, every candidate, there are red flags. We just have to identify them and address them, right?
Yep.
Doesn't mean they're not a good candidate, but we just know, hey, if this deal is not going to work, it's going to be because of this, right? And if we know that going into it, then to me, I feel more confident. It's always the red flag that I didn't see coming that just, it frustrates me. So it's just asking the why up front. You know, hey, why would you consider this? You know, what would make you say no, right? Hey, you want to work remote. Okay, well, what would it take for you to be in the office 3 days a week? All right, well, I'd need more money, right? So you find the things that are the concern and what would overcome those red flags.
It's interesting because one way of looking at it is, oh, I can't interview at this time. Our solution might be that's fine. Let's just find another interview time to put you in. But the problem may not be the interview time. The problem may be the why this person was originally interested in the role has changed. So now you're addressing the symptoms of the problem, not the problem itself. And I think that if you can address the problem itself, suddenly you've got a great candidate back in the play. Or you can't, and that candidate needs to be removed from the process because they're no longer interested ultimately. So it's really interesting to get to the root cause of those red flags. And I think that's a really interesting perspective, Al. So going back to you, Evan, I'm curious. So once we get somebody through this process, and I'm wondering if you have anything else to add to sort of interviews, inconsistencies with candidates, chime in. But I also wanted to get to what happens once we place the person. And now we've got red flags. This is the one, right? This is the one that's such a gut check for, I think, everyone involved, whether you're a talent solution organization or you're a customer. You've got somebody where they've gone through the interview process, they've accepted the position, we've got a start date in place, and now they're not answering their phone. Or now they come back and they want more money. You know, or now they are asking for a different start date altogether, and it's, you know, what have we seen like that, Evan? What kind of problems have you seen in that regard?
Yeah, I've actually had a really interesting one. I had a candidate accept the offer. She started like 2 weeks later. And she started at another company a week before that. And this company partnered with the same company I just placed her at. And that company was partnering on a project that this same team I placed her on was involved in.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so.
So she was working with herself.
She was working with herself both spots. Yeah.
Yeah.
The client called me. He's like, hey, like, you know, this is happening. Like, do you know anything about this? I was like, no, absolutely not. Like, I would never have a resource be double dipping, you know what I mean? So we ended up firing her, replacing her. It was an SOW, but yeah, that was weird and crazy. Never had that happen. And she was like legit. I mean, I felt so good about her in the process. She was sharp, but then yeah, you just get surprised. And then,
well, she may not have even known either that that's where it was going to go.
No. She knew because this company specializes in this industry, and they told her who the end client was, and it was my client on the other side too, so she knew.
Wow.
So it was weird, yeah.
That is amazing. So, okay, so ultimately we had to exit that person from that project and replace them with somebody else that was not compromising integrity.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I had another situation where a manager approached me. He's like, hey, I think your resource is double dipping. And I'm like, what? Like, why do you think that? And he's like, well, he's missing calls. He's, you know, not responsive. He'll take 3 hours to respond, all this stuff. And so I was like, okay, let me look into it. And so I kind of looked into it, and he could have been, right? Like, he had his own LLC. He had his own LLC, so we just did corp-to-corp deal. I said, look, you know, I'm not sure if he is, but I'm willing to replace him right now. Like, it doesn't matter to me we'll replace them. And he's like, no, like, I need them. It'll take too long to replace them, get the IP, get them ramped up, all that stuff. So we kept him. And then he's like, hey, at the end of the year, we're going to cut him and we'll replace him in January. So we had this whole plan for months. So I think it's just kind of about addressing the red flags with your candidates and your clients, being transparent, and then coming with a solution. Yeah.
Wow. That's just wild scenarios. And it is fairly common, I don't know about common, but not unheard of for consultants to work multiple projects at the same time. It's sort of an unsavory business. It can work as long as there's full transparency. The absence of transparency, though, can create a pretty sticky situation. Interesting having, you know, hearing you sort of navigate that with your clients. What about you, Mary? Like, before we even get to a start, what kind of post-placement, but before they start, red flags have you run into that you've had to overcome?
I've definitely been able to figure out that people are still interviewing.
Yeah.
After they've accepted an offer.
Why would they still be interviewing?
Because obviously they're just chasing money is always what I feel like it comes down to.
Okay.
I think money is a big driver, obviously, for people. But sometimes they do think that they secure an offer, they accept it. So they're like, well, I have this in the bag regardless now, but I'm going to keep interviewing because maybe something better is going to come along as far as money or whatever that may be. And so I've had that come up. I usually, like you said, the post-placement care, especially right after, like the time before someone starts and then, you know, definitely a couple of months after they start,
yeah,
candidate and client side, like these weekly check-ins.
Yeah.
And from there, you know, maybe you're hearing stuff like some hesitation start on the client side. Okay, we can get ahead of it. Or the candidate is, you know, maybe having some hesitations and, okay, here's what I'm here to help for still, right? And like go to the client and, you know, not to where it puts the candidate in a bad light at all, but sometimes it is. They're just afraid maybe to mention something because they're new. And that's what we're still here to help with. But at the end of the day, I say, like, people are your business and they're unpredictable and you can do everything right. And, like, they can literally just blindside you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had a guy start and he said he was having a baby and then he disappeared for 2 weeks and his VPN was, like, overseas somewhere. And then he came back and, like, it's like the guy just lied. And it was like, I don't understand. You know, it was one of those that everyone was just blindsided. So obviously he got fired.
So interesting. Yeah, I think, you know, that sustained communication early and often can help you root out some of these problems. You're not going to have 100% batting average getting people to start that got offered. I wish we could. It's heartbreaking when it doesn't happen. But it's a lot better that we're able to get those knocked out as soon as possible so we don't have somebody billing part-time in a client and then they leave. Then it's a real sticky situation. So real important that we get ahead of those. What about you, Al? Have we had some issues with – have you ever run into some of these problems where you've had red flags after the offer's been made and accepted?
Yeah. I mean, not too often, but it has happened where I've had somebody that start, and I think it was Mary just mentioned, and it's not so much that they're necessarily – still interviewing, but what happens is, especially if they're a contractor or they've been unemployed, they've had multiple interviews, right? So they already have been in the interview stage, and then all of a sudden we extend an offer.
Yeah.
So I've seen it where sometimes they've taken that offer and now they shop it, right? So now they tell whoever else they were interviewing with, oh, I got an offer here, and now then you match it, right? So I've also seen it where they've actually accepted the job. They've started in an interview they had 2 or 3 months ago, and that's the job they really wanted. Comes around, and then they're jumping.
So how do you get greater commitment from a candidate once they get the offer and accept from our account to prevent them from doing that?
Well, you're not going to prevent it necessarily, right? So you may be able to manage it where it's not such a shock when it happens.
Okay.
But you know, but it's asking, you know, it's just, hey, you know, where do you stand with your other offers? You know, maybe you ask them that question. Hey, just, hey, what would you do in this scenario? One of these other offers pop up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they'll probably tell you, it's like, oh, I'm not going to leave because they're going to tell you what you need to hear. But it's just, I'm asking that question just to understand what else is still floating out there that might pop up.
Sure.
Right. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I agree with you. I think it's having the conversation with the candidates from the very beginning and every conversation up until an offer is, where else are you interviewing? Where are you at in those processes? How does that one compare to this one? If you receive an offer from this one and that one, like, what would it come down to? And I think having those conversations from day one up until the end is really helpful, because then too, you can come back and be like, look, we talked about this and here's what you shared with me about what you would do if we got in this situation, like what's changing, you know? So I think it's just important to do it from the get-go and throughout the entire process.
Sure.
Right.
So it's,
right.
it's not about prevention, it's about mitigating. And we do that with constant communication, following up.
Yep. And if you think it's going to be a red flag, you know, we could present that to the manager even before we make the offer.
Of course.
And say, hey, look, you know, you're $5,000 of, you know, below budget. Hey, just keep in mind, candidate does have other interviews. This is potentially what that offer could be. Not saying that it's going to happen, but if you really want this candidate, you don't want to lose them. Hey, you know what? Instead of being $5,000 below budget, hey, why don't we go $5,000 above budget? Because then you're less likely to lose that resource to another client.
Love it. I appreciate it. It was a pretty rocky road going through the, I think, part one and part two of the series with Al, Mary, and Evan. But, you know, I think the point of these podcasts here is we really wanted to pull back the curtain, take a look at some of the real issues that we face and how we tackle them, how we communicate with clients, candidates, and so forth. So I really appreciate you guys jumping on here and sharing your thoughts. And to our audience, thanks for listening to another Innova podcast, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you for tuning in. Keep exploring the ever-evolving world of technology and unleash the potential of your talent. For more insights and strategies, click the subscribe button or visit us online at www.innovasolutions.com/podcasts. Don't forget to like, share, and comment. Goodbye. Until next time.